Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the third day of October, Anno Domini 2015. And you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. It's 5 minutes after the hour. Here comes the news. Well, here's the important thing, of course.
Uh-oh.
It is October, and October is Cyber Security Awareness Month, and we need the reminder. There are a lot of security risks in our devices, and we need to be more aware every day. For Android people, earlier this year, a security flaw known as Stage Fright was discovered that could potentially allow hackers to control users' Android's phone and steal data. Smartphone manufacturers moved to patch the flaw, which affected older Android devices, but many phones are still vulnerable, and now a new version of the bug has been discovered. Stage Fright 2.0 is a similar security flaw, which occurs when users play certain MP3 audio or MP4 video files on their smartphones. The new Stage Fright vulnerabilities are twofold, and all Android devices are vulnerable to at least one, not just older devices running older versions of Android's OS, as was the case with Star Fright 1.0. Google has already included a patch in its upcoming Nexus security update scheduled for this week. However, what about Android devices from other manufacturers? The manufacturers of handsets then have to incorporate them into their versions of Android. Then carriers have to get off their fat butts and schedule the downloads. Apple has just rolled out iOS 9.0.1, and it unfortunately has a flaw in tow that gives nosy techs a way to bypass your lock screen yet again. It's not easy to do. It takes pretty tight timing to execute, but there are thousands of people out there practicing right now. Until Apple gets a fix out, the only way to avoid it is to disable Siri. But even if you protect your phone, your data can get out there, and they can be sneaky. Hackers stole the personal data of 15 million T-Mobile customers by going after the company that processes the wireless carrier's credit checks. The U.S. government lost the information of 4 million federal workers. Health insurer Excellus Blue Cross Blue Shield had 10 million health records exposed. Last year, Home Depot and Target were among major companies hit by hackers. Thousands of medical devices, including MRI scanners, X-ray machines, and drug infusion pumps, are vulnerable to hacking, creating significant health risks for patients. The critical remote code execution flaw in WinRAR, could put 500 million users at risk of having their computers compromised if they simply open an infected zip file. PC support scams net billions of dollars every year. People calling you up and saying they're from Microsoft or whatever. How can you protect yourself? Well, the usual ways. Pick long passwords. Use different passwords on different sites and products. Change them often. Check your bank statements and your credit score every month. No vendor will ever call you or email you. Neither will Nigerian princes. And be aware, October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month. Pass it on. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And your choices are, I'm very aware, thanks. I try to be aware. Passwords are hard and I'm stupid. Bah, I'm going commando, baby. And right now, I'm delighted to say I'm very aware, thanks, is ahead, followed by I try to be aware. So that's good. So far, 22 of you have voted. Now, I know you're going to have more to say about this because, well, you are who you are. And so if you want, scroll down on the right, you'll see fascinating, under fascinating stuff, you'll see the forums, fora. And the second forum down is the poll discussion. And if you select that, you will see that the first choice so far is 3 October 15, Cybersecurity Awareness Month. Two people have posted, and you can join in the fun by clicking on that and adding your 2 and possibly even 2.5 cents. And then, of course, come back here and join us by giving us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, it's really a shame that the bad guys have ruined everything for the good guys.
Everything.
So, you know, you cannot trust a message that comes on your screen. You cannot trust an email that comes saying there's a problem. You just cannot trust any of those because they could be fake.
Yeah. No, it's... if like I have always said, if you have to think about it for more than, say, 5 seconds, delete it. If it's that important, they will get back to you.
Or
they'll do this thing, or they'll do this thing like pick up the phone and, oh, call you.
Right.
But you have to know who you're calling.
Mm-hmm.
And who's calling you. You know, you get,
yeah,
you know, hi, this is Citibank. There's a problem in your account. You know, can you give us your account number and password, please?
Mm-hmm. The answer is no, I'll call you back. Then they will say, okay, here's our number. And you say, no, I'll look it up.
Yeah. Yep.
The problem we find with that, especially people with computer help, is that you do a search for Windows help or something like that.
Right.
And without realizing it, the first several results are ads. They're not really Microsoft. It's not really Apple. It's not really Google.
Yep.
Someone the other day said he called Google to get some help on mail. I said, really? You found a phone number to call Google?
Yeah.
And they actually helped you?
I know people and I can't get phone numbers.
That just ain't happening.
Yep.
Email them and they might get back to you sometime.
You're right.
No guarantee on that either.
There is a lot of help on the web from the legitimate companies, but it's mostly web pages.
Yeah.
So what you need to do is be aware.
Or forum discussions.
And you need to be aware of what site you're on and what you're looking at. That's why we have this show. That's why, I do my newspaper column. That's why you can walk into a store and talk to these guys. That's the point behind that. You can get some help, but you have to be careful where you get that help.
And the remote help that we used to be able to do, now the bad guys are doing that too.
Mm-hmm.
So don't allow anyone into your computer.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
But it said to call the phone number.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
And I got some swap plan for you, too.
And that's part of the problem. We're programmed to obey signs.
True.
And it says you're infected, call the phone number. I better call the phone number.
Yeah. Oh, especially the elderly.
Yeah.
I find more and more folks, they get preyed upon. And these folks, I had one just a couple weeks ago, over $300.
Yep.
And the problem was still there.
Yep.
And the bad guys are sneaky because they are offering a service. So technically, they're not doing anything illegal.
Right.
But what we've seen now, we've got a couple of customers that have disputed their credit card charges. And the bad guys will send a contract. No, look, he signed a contract for our services. You know, 6 months. It's a 6-month tech support contract for $300.
Yep.
And he signed it. And it's printed with a script font.
Right.
So it looks like there's a signature. I had one the other day. They went to an electronic signing service online where you sign with your trackpad or your touchscreen, and that turns your signature into something electronic that can be attached to contracts.
Right.
And so, they're saying, bad guys say, no, this is a legitimate service he subscribed to. Give us our money back. And the consumer is saying, no, it was fake. They tricked me.
Mm-hmm.
Give me my money back.
Yep.
Right.
It's a quandary.
Right.
Yeah.
So just don't sign up for that stuff. Go to your local reputable dealer.
Yeah, don't believe any message that pops up on your screen.
Right.
You need to go and
research it yourself.
That's the problem. There's no they don't doubt. They don't think. The message popped up and said, I'm infected. Call this number.
No.
Never call any number your computer tells you to call.
Right.
Especially, if you're running an antivirus program, then your antivirus program will tell you there's a virus. It won't be a window that pops up on the web, and it would have that company's logo on it, most likely, and the name, Avast has detected a virus. So I'm almost surprised the bad guys aren't putting that in the fake messages.
Don't give them ideas.
Yeah, it's always, Windows tech support or, Apple tech support.
Well, the other thing to remember is if you get a pop-up like that, and it says Avast has found a problem, and you're not running Avast... it's fake.
Yeah, that's usually an indication. Yeah. Well, any program, if it gets you a warning.
I thought my computer checked for viruses automatically.
Yeah.
No, you have to put a program in to do that.
Mm-hmm. Right, you have to put a program in to do it. It's the same thing when you get the things that says, there's a problem with your credit card, please, with your Citibank credit card.
Yeah.
And then you think, well, I don't have a Citibank credit card. Or, you know, with your MasterCard, I don't have MasterCard.
Yeah, I had that during the Jazz Festival. Somebody called me about my M&T charge card. Oh, really? And I wanted to call him back and talk to him.
Yeah.
You know, just to sit there and play them on. But you get this stupid 800 number, and then nobody answers. And they want you to put in this information, and it's like, yeah, right. I was born at night, just not last night.
Right. Right.
But because if I could have gotten them on.
And
yeah, just to have fun.
If the bank calls you with a problem, they already know your account number.
Right.
Yeah.
So
I did get a call from my bank on a Saturday morning once. This is blah from M&T, and I thought, yeah, right. But I was nice, you know. Mm-hmm. I said, oh really? Huh. And he says, did you just buy 6 fur coats in Florida? Mm-hmm. No. Then your credit card has been stolen. We are going to dump it. And you need to, now this is the part which made me know it was legit. You need to stop in at the branch, at your nearest branch, which I see for you is blah, blah, blah. Okay. And get a new one. I said, you don't want to do anything over the phone? He says, sir, we do not take any information over the phone.
Yep.
Now I know it's legit. If they tell you they won't take information over the phone and go to the nearest physical location, then yes, now it's real.
Yeah.
Now it's real. So you really need to be aware and to be, you know, just be cynical. I'm a cynical old curmudgeon anyway. And so I don't worry as much as maybe some people do, but I'm not. I think that, you know, we really need to all be a little more careful.
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely.
All right, we should go to the phones. Steve from Henrietta has been patiently listening to us blather on the line. What's up, Steve?
Oh, thank you very much. I have an iPhone 6, not the new one. Verizon had a deal on the iPhone, the older iPhone 6s, the smaller ones.
Yeah.
And I want to do Wi-Fi at home. I have an old iPad and an old Airport Extreme. But I don't want I want to keep the iPhone and the iPad completely separate. What screens do I have to do, and what do I have to do to each screen to accomplish that?
Well, on each device, you need to join your Wi-Fi. The devices are all already separate.
Well, I think what he's saying is he doesn't want what's on one to show up on the other.
Right. I want to keep them completely separate. I do not want the iPhone to work with the iPad at all.
It doesn't, unless you tell it to.
How do I go about setting that up with the new iPhone?
The Apple's iCloud services are what synchronizes data between your devices. So don't turn that on if you don't want.
I think what he's asking for is a step-by-step instruction.
Yeah, yeah.
In the settings application under iCloud, turn it off.
Right, and then in settings under Wi-Fi.
Or when you first turn the device on, don't turn on iCloud.
Right. When you first turn the phone on.
Right.
It will ask you a whole bunch of questions, one of which is about iCloud.
Say skip.
Say skip that one.
Okay.
And if you already did turn it on, then you have to go into the settings app and under iCloud and turn it off.
Oh, no, that's all right. What about doing the Wi-Fi on my iPhone? How do I do that?
Same thing. When you first turn it on and set it up, one of the things it will ask you about is setting it up with Wi-Fi,
connecting
right?
to your Wi-Fi network, right?
Right.
If you've already turned the phone on, then you need to go into the settings app under Wi-Fi and join your network. And then it will ask you for the password you created on your network.
Now, do I have to use the same password as the iPad?
Yes.
The wireless password is the same for all devices, yes.
How about the name? Do I use the same name?
The wireless name, yes. But the iPad and iPhone can have their own names and their own passwords individually.
Right, but just the one that connects you to the network has to be the same on both devices.
But the name and the password could be the same or different.
You really should have different usernames and passwords on all your devices. Well, yes, you should have different passwords on your devices, except for the wireless, which has to be the same, because that's actually going to your wireless device, which only has one password.
Oh, okay.
All right, we got to take a break.
Thank you.
Back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
But before you get into that,
yeah,
congratulations.
Thanks. What did I do?
What have you been doing for quite a few years?
Oh, my thousandth. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. My thousandth column.
Congratulations,
doing,
young man.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been doing a column in the newspaper once a week since 1966, and they just published my 1,000th column. Clearly, I'm underpaid. No, I'm very happy. They've done real nice by me.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been pretty pleased. They were very generous in letting me be in the paper at all, and I'm grateful to that. It's been
with all the cutbacks and everything else.
Yeah, they've never gotten rid of me, so I've been very, very happy. Very happy.
Well, again, congrats.
So that was nice. Yeah. So thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. All right. Despite delivering a host of great new features, iOS 9 is turning out to be one of Apple's most troublesome launches. Two dedicated bug fixes have been released in the last week to combat the growing list of user problems, and now the second has come with a somewhat nasty and risky surprise. With iOS 9.0.2, Apple has stopped signing both iOS 8.4.1, which is the last version of iOS 8, and iOS 9.0.0. Signing is what allows a device to go back to a previous iOS version. Apple servers sign off permission to install each software version, and is commonly used when a user experiences trouble with the new software version. Consequently, with the release of iOS 9.0.2, Apple has taken away the escape route back to iOS 8. It's iOS 9.0.1 and 9.0.2 now, or nothing. This is a problem for a number of reasons. Firstly, iOS 9.0.2 doesn't fix all the bugs in iOS 9 point whatever, and now any users who experience problems cannot get back to iOS 8 safely while Apple continues its beta test of the first major iOS 9 update, iOS 9.1. Secondly, based on iOS beta history, iOS 9.1 is still at least 1 to 2 months away, and Apple releasing a third pure bug fix for iOS 9, which would be labeled iOS 9.0.3, would start to wreak a panic stations. It would also be unprecedented for Apple to put out 4 iOS updates in such quick succession. 3 in itself is new ground, with Apple last doing 2 only when it had to release 8.0.2 to cover for pulling the troubled 8.0.1 from the market. And what about losing the sign-off for iOS 9? That actually matters far less, since iOS 9.0.1, which is still being signed, and iOS 9.0.2, which is the most recent one, are both tweaked improvements of it. Basically, if you're struggling with iOS 9.1 or iOS 9.0.2, then iOS 9 isn't going to help you, though a trip back to iOS 8.4.1 would have. So does Apple denying you the ability to go back to iOS 8 bother you? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
We always say don't install the .0 apps. Wait for the .01. Yeah. Apparently in this case, that wasn't enough. And you got to wait for the .02.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't be the pioneer with the arrows
in your back.
Arrows
in
your back. Yeah.
So we've told folks.
Let other people figure out what the problems are.
The problem is if you've got iOS 8.4.1, which is actually apparently working pretty well, and you don't want any of the new features of 9, which I don't even know what they are, then you really want to stick with 8.4.1. But if you upgrade, you cannot go back. It's once you're on iOS 9, there's no going back to any version of 8 at all.
Hmm.
Which is
one of the features is I can run two apps at the same time.
Yeah, great. That
Windows has been able to multitask.
Well, on a tablet, that's
on a tablet. It's, Android can do it.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I get that Apple wants people to move forward. Apple's all about forward, not backwards, and I do get that. I really, truly do. But because 9.0 point anything is a little buggy right now, and the fixes have not necessarily been either timely or, well, working.
You say it so eloquently.
Right. The ability to go back to a stable operating system is crucial. So those of you who are looking to move back, be aware that you simply cannot.
So if you haven't upgraded to OS 9 yet, you may not want to yet until the rest of the bugs are fixed.
Is that sort of like Hotel California?
Yeah,
you can check in anytime you want, but you could never leave.
Right. Yeah. Okay, great. Now that song stuck in my head. Thank you so much.
It's probably in your list there.
Yeah, probably is somewhere.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying iOS 9 is bad. Apple is saying that.
Mm-hmm.
They've already come out with 9.0.1 to fix some bugs. Mm-hmm. Then 9.0.2, these are bugs because they fixed them. 9.0.2 to fix more bugs. And now they're saying there are features that are unfixed in 9.0.2. which there will either be a 9.0.3 or they'll just wait for 9.1. But the longer they wait, the more those bugs will be exploited. So really, the ability to go back to 8.4.1, I suppose you can, if you root your system, you can sideload it or whatever, but to go back to it legally is not possible any longer.
And that's sort of the irony, that in order to root or jailbreak your phone, you have to exploit a bug.
Right.
Because you're not supposed to do that. So every time a jailbreak comes out, it's exploiting a bug, and then Apple fixes that bug, and now the next one will come out.
Right.
And now the lock screen bug, that almost happens with every version of iOS when it comes out, that you can bypass the lock screen and do stuff, especially if you've got Siri turned on your lock screen. So turn Siri off for your lock screen. Because when your phone is locked, there's a federal law that says you still have to make 911 calls. So part of the phone is still working
mm-hmm.
even when it's locked. So you can tell Siri to call, and Siri will access your contacts and your address book. And so that's the ways these exploits are happening, is by having Siri on the lock screen.
Right. And so there's also a convenience there. People do the same thing with Google now. You want to be able to say the word okay, followed by the word Google. Notice how I put that. so that you can, get the phone to wake up or make a call or do whatever you want it to do. But doing that is risky. So having a phone that's locked is safer. I actually have my phone set so that it unlocks to the Bluetooth in the car.
Yep.
So it's unlocked in the car. And I don't have Bluetooth in my car, so I bought a $30 Bluetooth kit, which plugs into the cigarette lighter, to the auxiliary power port.
Yeah.
Because nobody uses them to light cigarettes anymore. And it's got an extra USB port so I can plug another device in and charge it,
yep.
In addition to my device. So it's got Bluetooth and blah, blah, blah. So it works out pretty nicely, and I'm very pleased with it, actually. Because now when I get in the car it automatically syncs. I can play music while I'm driving, do whatever I want. But you really need to be careful and aware of where and how you unlock your devices. And there are a lot of people, of course, who never lock their devices.
Well, yeah, and they usually say, well, I don't have anything anybody wants. Well, they want your access to your data so they can do other things. They can use your device in order to attack other people. It's a level of anonymity. Even if you don't have any specific data they want, you probably have a password in there. You might have your Amazon account in there, your Google account.
If you have my phone number in your phone, you damn well better lock it.
Yep.
And the thing of it is, though, it's just not so much the information. It's just having the email addresses. That's how they make their money. Because then they turn around, they turn around and sell those lists to other spammers. Because all the spammers want to do is, broadcast whatever they want to do. So these folks that are gathering this information, they might not necessarily be after your personal information, just your list of email addresses and everything else. Because then they turn around and can offer these spammers, and it's an underground thing, folks. You don't see it widely publicized, but they can turn around and say, all right, tell you what, for $75, I'll give you 500,000 email addresses. And what did that take them? Nothing. They created a little script kiddie program that pulls in all this information. They turn around and dump, 500,000 email addresses out to this person for $75. They make money.
Yeah, they sell it. It's called the dark web, and they sell it all over the dark web. It's stuff you can't get to with Google. You have to know where it is in order to get to it, blah, 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 blah. But it's everywhere out there, and there's millions upon millions upon millions of things you can get that are all illegal and all things like, a million addresses for $75, like Dave says. And they don't charge a lot because it's all out there, They can sell it a million times. They charge you $75. They charge the next guy $75. Yeah. Charge the next guy $75. Pretty soon you're talking real money.
Yeah, and just the sale one sale $75. That's $75 more that they had in their pocket than they did before, just for writing the stupid little program that goes out to people's machines.
Or more likely, buying a program from somebody else.
Yeah. Right.
There's a lot of bad guys that sell these exploit kits.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's where you buy your script kiddie stuff and all the other things that are out there. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Morning. I got a question for you guys.
All right.
Got a little side project I'm doing. I basically scrapped together a bunch of old computer parts, and I'm trying to make like an old retro gaming PC. And what I've been wanting to do with it is basically throw a couple versions of Windows on it and Linux, along with a few emulators for like PlayStation, Nintendo, stuff like that. My question is, it's a Pentium 4 processor, about 2 gigahertz, 767 megabytes of RAM, CDRW, CD-ROM, 3.5 floppy on it. And I was wondering, is it even possible to get Windows 3.1 partitioned on a hard drive on there and installed and working?
I wouldn't bother. I mean, because here's the reason. Mm-hmm. Even if you just get XP on there, if you can get at least XP, XP had a great feature in it that you could take a program that did run in, say, Windows 3.1, right-click on it, and say emulation mode. And what it would do was fake out the operating system with XP and make the program think that it was an old version of Windows 3.1.
Okay. Well, I was just wondering if I could actually do it. It was just one of those weird things. Just
it might work.
See if I can have it.
I don't know what partitioning tools work.
Oddly enough, I have an old install disk of it on CD-ROM, so I'm just itching to use it, really.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on how you set up your machine, too, right? I mean, if you set up the machine to boot into something like a version of Linux, and then you run VirtualBox on it.
Right.
And then in all those virtual machines, you load Windows 3.1 and Windows XP and your various emulators and whatever. That probably would work better. You can also, if you want to actually spend money, you can buy a hypervisor operating system and just not really have an operating system at all, but it'll boot up and ask you which virtual machines you want to run. Now, you can run multiple machines at once, too, but you need a lot of RAM for that.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, guys.
There you go.
You're welcome.
Good luck. Let us know how that comes out.
We're also seeing... Okay. Yep. We're also seeing a lot of the classic text adventure games and some of the early arcade games are getting re-released as web games. And sometimes they actually get re-released as apps for mobile.
Well, on my Chrome browser, I have an extension called ZEDT, and it lets me play classic adventure games right on the system.
Yep.
And there are lots of places you can download them, I believe, legitimately.
Yeah.
We talked about Lunar Lander a little while ago.
Right, right.
I still remember that back to my old Kodak days, Lunar Landing, because we got this one upright analyzer computer. And we wound up writing a Lunar Landing program.
Nice.
In BASIC.
Yep.
And when it was downtime, you know, we weren't running tests of that, we'd load that up and sit there and play on this monochrome screen.
Yep. Wow. You could play, you could load up any, as long as you had a BASIC interpreter, you could get the code for Lunar Lander and Snake and, you know, a dozen different things.
Yep.
Lots of fun stuff. And of course, if you've got an early version of Windows like XP or 3.1, they come with BASIC. Of course, nothing comes with BASIC anymore. Although you can, in Linux, you can still load a couple of different BASIC mm-hmm. And that works out pretty nicely. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Jim from Webster, New York on the line. Hiya, Jim. What's up?
Well, I'll tell you what's up. I switched to, Microsoft 10.
Yeah?
Or Windows 10.
Yeah.
And I always use, for my work, I always use Microsoft Streets and Trips. Right after I went to 10, I was able to use it. And then about a week later, I brought it up, and it says, your registry settings for this application were not copied correctly. To correct these settings, run setup again for this application from the location where you originally installed it. Okay. I really didn't know what that meant. So what I did is I uninstalled the Microsoft Trips and Streets and Trips. And then I reinstalled it, but I still get the same message. When I called and asked for help, I got an answer that Microsoft does not support Streets and Trips anymore to use Bing Maps.
Or, right. Or Google Maps, which is quite a bit better, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, is there no way? I mean, I have the program here from originally when I bought it in 2008, but I've still been using it.
You need to use it on an older operating system. Apparently something now in Windows 10 broke.
In fact, it really was not compatible with Windows 8.
Well, the last one I had was Windows 7.
Right. And in fact, it's not even listed in the Windows Compatibility Center anymore.
Okay.
So it's been pretty much abandoned.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I wish I had a better answer for you.
Yeah, I wish you did too, because, you know, like I said, I use it on my work, but it's got a good memory. It has every place I've been. And
Does Windows 10 have that compatibility mode?
What's that?
Like we were mentioning to previous caller, Windows XP has a compatibility mode.
It's not the same.
That will run old programs.
Right,
Windows 10 doesn't do it.
In fact, Microsoft has a compatibility center, and if I enter the term Streets and Trips into the Windows Compatibility Center and press search, it takes me to the "It's time to upgrade to Windows 10" screen.
Okay.
Which, by the way, I'm on a Chromebook, so that's unlikely.
Yeah. So theoretically, you know, well, if you have an older machine with an older OS, you can run it there.
Right.
Theoretically, you could install a virtual machine with an older OS in it and run it there. Mm-hmm. But that gets trickier and trickier.
Right. So yeah, I'm afraid that it's learn Bing's maps or Google Maps.
Okay. All right. I guess I could do that.
Sorry.
Yep.
Thanks a lot. Bye now.
Bye bye.
And that's one big reason to not upgrade your operating system is if you have older programs.
Yeah, hold off for a while. There's no big urgency. Well, you've got
in some cases you have to hold off ever.
Yeah.
Because old programs sometimes won't work on new OSs.
Right, right. And there's actually a bunch of places, sites on the web that have mapping stuff on them. I don't have any in my head right now, but I know.
Well, we found AAA has a pretty good app for those of you that remember TripTix.
Yep.
They can do the same thing there as well.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of places that will do that. I have a list of them somewhere.
There's OpenStreetMap, which is open source.
Yep. But
now it's apps on your smartphone that everyone's going for.
Yeah.
Right. OpenStreetMap.org, Stamen.com, Stamen, Here.com, and Waze.com, Waze.
Yeah, I'm an alternative too.
I was at a Rochester Google's meeting where we
talked about those too.
Talked about those things, so. I just wrote those four down. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. What's up, Dennis?
Hi, I wanted to make a comment about that Streets and Trips. I don't know if my situation would be relevant to the gentleman who just called, but I've been using something called Post-it Notes since Windows 98, and every time I use it, a note pops up that says the settings are not in your registry, blah, 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 but I can still use it. So I'm wondering if the guy... just if he can ignore that, whether he can still use the program.
Oh, that's a good point. I'm sure there's something dangerous about that. But as long as it still works, I guess use it till it stops working.
Yeah, well, that was just a thought. That's all I got for today.
No, that's not bad. Thanks, Dennis. Okay. We appreciate that. That's true. Just because it says it's not working correctly doesn't mean it's not working at all. Right. I mean, what it really says is it's not set up correctly in the registry. That doesn't mean it isn't going to work. It just isn't going to do something in the registry correctly. And I get that. I do. So, Jim, you may want to just if we'll okay, let you get, you know, is there a ignore this or okay or something that'll let that happen. So I guess we'll see. All right. Back to the phones. It's another Steve. This one's from Greece, New York.
Yeah, you've been having a lot of Steve's today. I have a VLC question for you.
A who question?
VLC, the player.
Oh, yeah, VLC. Yeah, absolutely.
When I select a number of MP3s and just push enter, it's supposed to launch the player. That's what I've got it set up for.
Yeah.
And it does, but then I get a message that said there's a runtime problem. And if I click on that, basically acknowledge your little thing, it closes VLC. But if I open VLC first and drag those same MP3 files to the player, everything works fine.
You may have to change the file association for MP3.
I did. I mean, it's set up for MP3. It launches VLC, I'm sorry, launches VLC when I click on it, but it says there's a runtime error.
Huh. And that happens with every MP3 you try?
Yep.
Yeah, what VLC really wants you to do is create a playlist, either by dragging individual files into it.
Which works fine, yes. If you select 23 files, you can drag them all to it.
And it becomes a playlist.
Right.
You can then save that as a playlist, exactly.
But this is new. This hasn't, nothing has changed. I've changed nothing.
And it used to work, and now it doesn't.
Yeah, you used to be able to just pick them and then hit enter.
That's a lovely question, Steve. I don't have an answer for that. I truly don't. I wish I did. We have... What?
Update or uninstall and reinstall?
Yeah, uninstall, reinstall.
Yeah, you might want... Well, that certainly can't hurt.
No.
Make sure that VLC doesn't need to update, and also you might try and uninstall and reinstall.
Yeah, I've tried for updates. I haven't done the un and re yet, but...
Use Revo, though.
Yeah, I know. And I'll probably go to the extreme, take it all out, and...
Yeah, really purge it right out of the system.
Yep.
Really, that's the only thing I can suggest at this point, because we have, you know... One of the things, what version of Windows are you using?
7.
Yeah. What we're finding is that every version of Windows changes things a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And most people don't do that pick and click, right? What most of them do is create a playlist and then play the playlist.
Mm.
Because most people want to hear the same set of songs. You know, I want my... running mix or my whatever it is. So we don't, there are edge, what are called edge usage cases, which means you're in the minority in how you use it, but that doesn't help you because it is how you want to use it.
Right, and it's worked every time. In fact, every player I've had, it's worked with. You just pick the files, and when you hit enter, it'll launch whatever it's associated with.
Yeah, I expect that to work. But I'm wondering if, is it with a specific set of files or any files?
Well, it's I'm working with MP3, so I can't tell you about...
I meant with any specific songs, I guess.
No, it's not a specific song, because I pick different ones all the time.
Yeah, but is one particular song in all of those groups?
No.
Okay. That would indicate a bad audio
bad
file.
Bad.
Yeah.
Now, this has been going on for a long time. I know how to get around it, but I'm so used to just picking them and hitting enter.
Right.
That I just do it automatically and then go, oh, damn, I got to do, the other way.
Right. No, I understand your frustration. I just don't.
Some other update might have changed something else.
Yeah, it is update. I've got it to the latest update, but.
No. I'm saying within Windows.
Oh, that's possible. Yeah.
I mean, you know, because of security updates or whatever, something that was working fine all of a sudden could throw a hitch in it.
Hadn't thought of that. Yeah.
Yep.
I don't trust them.
Yeah, I hear you.
Right. So if you...
Here's one thing you could try, though. Go into your restore programs.
Yeah.
And see when's the last Windows update that it did. And whether it's relative to this incident happening, and see if you can roll it back to a day before that.
Well, I don't. That's not going to work because this has been going on for a long time. I've been living with it, and I couldn't tell you when it started.
Mm.
You know, it's been at least 2 or 3 months I've been living with it, and I said, "Hey, wait a minute! I know the guys that can fix this."
Well, then, you know what? It wouldn't
all
hurt.
Them, I know.
No. Now, you normally just hit enter, right?
Yep.
Because what I'm thinking is there used to be a problem with the play all command. And I'm not sure that ever got fixed.
Yeah.
Dang. And that's what I'm thinking is that there used to be that problem under Windows 7.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, there's a lot we don't know yet about Windows 10. That hasn't really started to surface. But there used to be that problem with the play all command. But you're saying if you drag them in and hit play all, it works.
I can just drag them in, let go. I don't even have to hit play all. I just drag them and drop them, and it'll launch the player and go through the list.
Right. Okay, all right. No, I get that. All right. Yeah, I don't know what to tell you because there used to be a problem with Play All, and I don't remember if there was ever a solution for it.
Thing is, this I've been using VLC for years, and it's always worked for me the way I just select them and hit enter.
Right.
Now, about 2-3 months ago, it does this runtime thing, and I'm looking for runtime, what's going on. But it confuses me because if I just open VLC first and drop them in, everything works donkey hurry.
Yeah. I wish I knew. I do not know, and I apologize.
Oh, that's okay. I can live with it. I know what to do to get around it.
Well, right.
Yeah,
and
it's
that's
just
an
inconvenience.
Thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know what... I really wish I knew what to tell you. I just don't. I don't remember what the solution was, and I'm not finding it easily online. Sorry.
That's okay. I appreciate your time. Happy anniversary.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Congratulations on 1,000. That's actually a nice milestone.
Yeah, it really is.
And a couple of days ago, the Yankees hit 10,000, so...
There you go. I have a ways to go to catch up to them.
You may not. They get to play 162 a year.
That's true, and they got a lot more people playing.
Yep.
All right, thanks.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, I don't have an answer for that VLC thing. I really wish I did.
Like I say, I still, you know, it wouldn't hurt if he knows this just, say, happened 2 months ago. Because Restore does keep, you know, records of months and months going back. So if he thinks it happened, say, 3 months ago, go back to 4 months. Just pick a restore point there and try going back. Because he can always come back to putting it back to the point that he's at right now. He's not going to be any worse off.
Right. And it may well be some change in the registry that did that. I agree. But I don't. I just don't have an answer, and I don't know what to say about it. All right, that music tells me that you have wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. But for those of you who are slow learners, we're going to give you the chance to do it again. Because although we're going to take a slightly longer break this time, we will be back for the whole other hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. With Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And here at the top of the hour, it's Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, and you. Stay tuned for a whole nother hour of sound bites on the truly great and solely member supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right, it's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And you can join in the fun by giving us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Now, I know you've been all complaining over the last few weeks about the Windows 10 privacy problem. The launch of Windows 10 has been an undeniable success for Microsoft. The operating system addresses...
When you force it on people, of course it's success.
Exactly. It does solve a number of the major concerns that users had with 8.1. It's been praised for its performance and reliability, and to date it's been installed on over 100 million systems. As Steve points out, sometimes forcibly, at least naggably,
yeah.
Right? For a rollout as big as important as Windows 10, Microsoft seemed to have hit a number of right notes for the most part. One area in which Microsoft has taken considerable heat is in regards to privacy. With features like Cortana, which at their very core require access to more details to provide a personalized experience, all of the logs and telemetry Microsoft tracks to document bugs, there's a real need to collect at least some data. Where to draw the line, however, will always be up for debate. With all of the negative attention Microsoft has gotten in this subject, it was only a matter of time before the company responded publicly. In a blog post titled Privacy in Windows 10, Microsoft's Terry Myerson explains what data Microsoft collects and why they are collected. According to the Post, from the very beginning, we designated Windows 10 with two straightforward privacy principles in mind. One, Windows 10 collects information so the product will work better for you. Two, you are in control with the ability to determine what information is collected. That's somewhat ambiguous, especially since disabling some features still resulted in data being sent to Microsoft. And that line continues, with Windows 10, information we collect is encrypted in transit to our servers and then stored in secure facilities. If you're wondering what kind of data are collected, Meyerson said we collect a limited amount of information to help us provide a secure and reliable experience. This includes data like the anonymous device ID, device type, and application crash data, which Microsoft and our developer partners use to continually improve application reliability. That's all well and good, but there's something else to consider. The device ID may be anonymous, but it is unique to a particular hardware configuration. And I'm sure the IP address that the data were transmitted from is logged somewhere within Microsoft. So correlating that device ID to a particular IP address could negate that anonymous device ID and identify a particular machine in a particular place. There are more details in the Post about the data being collected as well. For example, as it related to Cortana, knowing whether you are a Seattle Seahawks fan or Real Madrid fan in order to give you updates on game scores or recommend apps you might enjoy, or remembering the common words you type in text messaging conversations to provide you convenient text completion suggestions. These types of data may be crossing a line for some folks, but it's no different than what all of the other digital assistants or predictive typing mechanisms collect. So if you use a mobile device with these features, those data are being collected already. It's not fair to chastise Microsoft for doing something that's been widely accepted on other platforms. So, for example, if you use Siri or you use Google Now, they're collecting exactly the same sort of data. Otherwise, they aren't able to say you have an appointment in an hour or DC United is playing tonight and here was last night's score, whatever that is. So, do you worry about Microsoft knowing your business? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. So, and the same thing like with airline flights. You can, my phone will tell me, the flight starts in 3 hours. You should go to the airport now.
Especially with Google, because if you use Google Mail, it can read your mail and find receipts and find air tickets and then pop up the cards saying, you better leave now because your flight is soon.
Or you can use it also for incoming flights to know when to get up to the airport instead of constantly wondering, is it on time? Is it on time? You can just tag that one flight to let you know the progress of it. Yes.
Trains too, but we used to do that all the time for Amelia.
So it's all the conveniences we love about computers. You forget that your computer has to know stuff about you and use that information to find the stuff.
Well, and nobody seems to mind that Apple and Google are getting that information, but everybody loses their stuff when it's Microsoft.
Microsoft people hadn't noticed before because they don't pay attention to Apple and Google.
Yeah, that might be it.
Doesn't RTS do the same? You can track when a bus is coming along, and so you don't have to get out there, especially and follow. Whatever.
Yeah, a lot of services like that have their own apps, so you can.
Well, if it's their own app, however, that's a little different.
Yeah. But when it's a web app, it sort of does.
When you buy a ticket, and then suddenly a week later, your phone pops up and says, "Hey, don't forget you're traveling tomorrow. You know, you got to get up at 8 to do that."
Right.
That's a little different. That's a whole different thing. You know, we have when my daughter used to take the train, there's an Amtrak app that tells you, the train's going to be 2 hours late. Like, we didn't know that already.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I'm just parked off at Amtrak a little bit. But the same when, for air flights, there's I've got both apps still on my phone, actually. The Amtrak one is from Amtrak directly, and all right, where are you? Come on, show me the app. That's not going to do it.
You get so many apps, and you put them in folders, then you can never find them again.
That's exactly right.
So use your search window.
One is called Amtrak. Okay, that's good. And the other is called Flight View Free, and obviously that one is for planes. So both of those That's something where you log in and say, I want to follow this flight.
Right.
And that friend of mine was traveling recently, and we were tracking the flight to make sure it was okay. And that scares me a little bit, that all that stuff is publicly on the internet for people to track. But I wanted to make sure the flight was okay.
Right. And all that information is public.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, they publish when their flight is going to take off and when it's going to land.
Yeah.
It's not hard to extrapolate where it is in between.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Don from Churchville, New York. Welcome, Don. What's up?
Yes, well, I got a question about AVG. I got on my desktop, it's Windows 7. About a week or so ago, a message came up that said you need to enter your ID number or something like that. I can remember, and it didn't. So I couldn't tell if my AVG was still running or not. So, and the icon, I couldn't bring it up. So, when it did come up, it said everything was not working. Okay, the orange was on there. Nothing's working. So
yeah,
I go, okay.
Here's the deal. AVG actually has two versions.
Right.
There's the free version and there's the trial version.
And then there's the paid
version, I
suppose.
Or as they call it, the free forever version and the free version until you have to pay for it.
Right.
So what it sounds like is you may have, in fact, gotten the pay version, and now they wanted you to enter the user
serial
your
number
license number. Yeah.
Which I have no idea what that is, you know.
Well,
you
have, because you don't have one, because you thought you were using the free forever version.
Yes, that's right.
So what you really need to do is to go back on AVG's website, and that's one of the problems I've had with the Security Tango. They all change their websites regularly, so I can't just point, or I can spend all day, I suppose, every day looking at that. But so I can't point people to the free forever version. So what you need to do is go on and very carefully read the website to make sure you are indeed getting the free forever version.
And when it asks if you want a free trial of the pro version, say no.
Right.
Okay. Right. I tried reloading or uninstalling the original one and installing a new one, and it says it just won't load.
Yeah, because it knows that's the pay version, and it knows you didn't pay for it.
Right.
Oh, I see.
And use Revo uninstall it. Well, use Revo to uninstall it.
Reload?
Revo.
R-E-V-O.
It's another program that will thoroughly uninstall the AVG from your machine.
Oh, okay.
It cleans out the registry and looks for all the entries of AVG in there and kind of keeps things clean and neat.
But again, Don, pay attention when you're downloading it. Don't just grab the first thing that they show you, because I guarantee you that will be the pay version.
You're right.
There's a bunch of sites for the AVG downloads.
No, you want to go to AVG directly. Never download something from another site. Mm-mm. You have no idea what else is coming along.
Yeah, what other... Other bloatware is attached to it.
Right, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly,
that's the problem. Yeah. So you always have to go directly to the manufacturer when you're downloading something.
Okay, so keep trying to reload it, and eventually I might find the right one, right?
That's the theory.
Okay. All right, well, thanks.
All right, thanks. Yeah, they do make it tricky. They want you to pay for the software. And, of course, none of them charge so much that it's a terribly onerous thing to do. And of course, we always encourage people to buy their software. But, you know, some of us can't, and I get that. And so, you know, if you're going to buy the free version, you just need to pay very, very strict attention as to which one you're getting. Because don't forget, free download...
Every download is free.
Every download is free. It's what comes out the other end that may not be free after 3 months.
And then during the install, read the messages that are coming up, because one of them will probably say, do you want a trial of our pro version? And you want to say no, because then at the end of the trial, you'll have to pay for it.
Right. Exactly. All right, back to the phones, all the way out to Altoona, PA for Jason. Hiya, Jason. What's up?
Hey, Nick. First, just as a member of the BLE, I have to say, please stop picking on Amtrak.
I'm not picking on Amtrak. Every single time we pick my daughter up, it's 2 hours late. That is not picking on them. That is simple fact.
Well, I just have to throw the union line. You know that.
Yeah, I know that. Let me say this. I love Amtrak. I love taking the train. I would way rather take the train than fly. it's the best way to travel, bar none. But they're never on time. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I could say the same thing about airplanes. But in any case, the reason I was calling, if you don't mind if we rehash the web advertising topic, I have a potentially new take that I haven't heard anybody else come across with yet.
Go for it.
Well, one thing I'd like to point out, like you guys were saying about being online, you know, starting back in the mid to early 90s, I was there as well. I went to Pioneer High in Yorkshire, and we had a dedicated T1 to Erie 1 BOCES. So I was on back when, you know, a white or a gray background and black text was the way the entire web looked.
Yep.
One thing I'd like to remind people is when the web and commercial interests got online, it wasn't a way to make money. The websites were part of doing business. It was a cost of doing business for the companies that were out there.
Yep.
Now, I understand that the paradigm has changed, and some of these companies don't have a physical presence in the brick-and-mortar world. And for those ones, I can understand where advertising comes in. But a website for a company that advertises for a brick-and-mortar store or even Amazon to a certain extent, because they're providing physical merchandise and making money on that, or at least theoretically,
right,
the advertisements should only support that, as far as I'm concerned. They shouldn't be there to support the operation of the website. Now, in your case, and please don't take this as an attack against Soundbites. That's not the intention.
Right.
I can understand where, in your case, because it's a nonprofit endeavor, you need to have the adverts to help offset the cost.
Yep.
And I'm perfectly fine with that. But one of the things that nobody has bothered to say, they've kind of skirted around the issue with the occasional mention of, I forget what the name of the program from Google's service, where you can give them so many dollars a month and they'll offset, they'll block the ads on the site you visit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm referring to?
Yeah.
Okay. What I was going to say is that nobody has bothered to say, well, why don't we give the people the option of turning off the ads and pay and see which they would rather have? Because I would gladly support the websites that I visit that depend on ads directly rather than playing the game of trying to view their ads and hope they get a couple of cents here and there versus me give them a dollar directly and then make out even better when I know that they're going to be supported.
That's a very good idea, Jason. Some sites do that. If you log in, you get an ad-free version of the site, but not enough, and I completely agree with you. I'm afraid we got to take a break. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, and you, 19 minutes after the hour. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Mark from Rochester on the line. What's up, Mark? Mark? Hello?
Hello.
Are you talking to me?
I don't know. Who are you?
I'm Jason still.
Jason, you're still with us.
Yeah, it never cut me off. I was going to ask you a quick question, but as long as I'm on the air, I was just going to say, can we put out a passionate plea to websites to, if they're going to start the detecting of ad blockers, to put up an option of either turn off the ad blocker or give us a couple of bucks?
Many do, actually. You can. There's a JavaScript you can run that if somebody blocks your ads, instead what you'll see is a thing that says, well, it can say anything you want it to say. But what most people say is exactly what you're saying, is I see you're blocking our ads, that's cool, but we make money off of those ads, so please shoot us a couple of bucks and there's a link.
Okay, all the ones I've seen are just please drop your blockers, so.
Yeah, no, you can put anything you want in there, and I agree with you, the right way to do it is to say, look, block them if you want, but this is how we make money, so if you don't mind, throw us a couple of bucks on PayPal or whatever it happens to be.
All right, and sorry to Mark for taking up this call.
No, not a problem. Thanks, Jason. Bye-bye. Not sure entirely what happened there, But Dave is going to Dave's got the hammer out, the big hammer. Oh, the big hammer. So we'll see shortly whether or not that gets fixed or not, and we'll get whoever the next person actually ends up being on the line. Can you tell I'm vamping?
Yeah.
Vamping.
We do see on a lot of the smaller websites, they will have, you know, PayPal donate buttons or subscribe buttons or a tip jar. It's the mega conglomerates that tend to that tend to have the most ads in the first place that tend to be the most draconian about drop your ads or you won't be able to list. The one thing I do hate is that some of the websites, even when you do pay for the subscription, there are still ads. So the ads aren't offset by the subscription. It's just an extra revenue source.
Right. Well, and that's true. That's, you know, on Ask Nick, right now I don't have anybody sign in. If you go to Ask Nick right now to read all the news, you'll see Google ads. But if you're blocking them, I don't currently have anything that says please show me some ads because, you know, look at the ads because that's how I make money on the website, and I have a donate button on it, but maybe not. Maybe I don't. I don't even have a donate button. What the hell's wrong with me? What the heck?
You're very tired.
I'm an idiot. All right, anyway, the point is we're going back to the phones. We're going to talk to Mark from Greece, New York. Mark, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
There we go. What can we do for you?
I got a question for Steve.
Yeah.
I got an iPod back in December. And everything was working great. And
thanks for calling. Bye.
Was working great, he said.
Well, it's still working fairly well. What's going on is I've noticed since, I don't know, one of the 8-point-something updates till now, which now I'm running on the iPod, I got 9.0.2, and the iTunes version I'm running on the PC is 12.3.0.4.4. And as far as I know, they're both up to date. And every time I get an update, I lose, not on the PC end, but on the player end, I start losing album art.
Huh.
And even if I sync it from the PC again, I'll delete it off the iPod and sync it back onto the iPod. From the PC, the artwork is still gone. The only way it'll come back in is if I go into iTunes, remove those particular albums from iTunes, then go back in and tell them to find them again, and they find them, and then I sync them, and then the artwork's back.
Is this artwork you've pasted into the metadata or artwork that
this
iTunes
is artwork
looked up?
From when it was ripped.
Yeah, that's some of that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
Is that when you buy music from the iTunes store, the artwork is part of the file.
Mm-hmm.
And iTunes is trying to add artwork to files that don't have it. We've sometimes seen where the wrong artwork will get put in, especially to like compilation albums. You might get the artwork from one of the individuals instead of the compilation. Generally speaking, it's difficult to get that artwork back without basically pasting it in again.
Yeah, I get it back.
Or there's
in
a couple
if I
of
just
other
go
programs.
In and delete it out of iTunes and off the iPod, and then go back into File and tell it, you know, add a
add it back in. Yeah,
add a file or add a folder depending on what was missing.
It's in the metadata.
Bringing
of
it
the
back
file.
In, syncing it, the artwork's back, and then the next time I get an update, it'll be a totally different, you know, album than the last time, you know, and it's only maybe a half dozen, and most of the time I notice it because they're in playlists, and they're missing in the playlist, and I go and I look at the artist, and I see that it's the artwork's missing there. But it's never the same thing twice. It's always something different. It's never the same artwork.
Yeah.
And it's only maybe a half a dozen or less, but it happens every time I get an update.
I'm seeing that there's a file probably in the iTunes folder somewhere called Optimized Artwork. And that's separate from the artwork that may be embedded in the metadata of the MP3 itself.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of suggestions to delete that database and start over again, which would be even worse than doing it individually. There are also programs that will scan your iTunes library and add artwork that's missing. But other than what you've been doing, remove and re-add, it's, I don't think there's an automatic way to do that.
Okay. So it's just something I have to put up with.
It appears to be a common issue during updates.
Okay.
Now, of course, Apple's solution is buy all your music from the iTunes store, then it won't do this.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to buy things I already have.
Right.
That's not happening.
Oh, do you have iTunes Match?
No.
Okay. Well, that's a feature that takes the music you've ripped and matches it to music they sell, mm-hmm. and it can upgrade the bit stream. So if you ripped it at 128, you'll actually get a 256 rip. But we've heard problems again when you turn that service off, because it's $25 a year. And when it first came out, we called it the Napster tax.
Yeah.
Because all of the music that you know, acquired suddenly became legal copies through iTunes Match. But if you turn the service off, things can happen.
Right.
And now with Apple Music, the music subscription service, there's some overlap between Apple Music and iTunes Match, but there's also some conflicts between them because they do similar things. That we're hearing if you've turned both of them on, that can be a problem with your library too.
Yeah, I don't have that though. So.
And this is on an iPod, you said, right?
Not, yeah, it's on the iPod Touch fifth generation.
Okay.
Yeah. And like I said, the artwork is still on the PC. I mean, as far as the actual iTunes program, all the artwork's there, but I can't get it to go back on the iPod unless I delete it out of iTunes on the PC and then
Have you tried a full iPod erase and restore?
No, I haven't done that.
That might be something to try, but I'm Googling around here and I'm seeing these reports are going back years that this seems to be a common issue that some of the artwork is lost during an upgrade.
Okay.
When it's artwork you've added in yourself.
All right, well, I guess right now I'll just put up with it. It's, like I said, it's not a lot, but I notice it happens every time I get an update, so...
Yeah.
Well, the other option is don't install the updates.
Well, yeah.
Depending if it's a bug fix update or new feature upgrade.
Well, I love the upgrade they did prior to this last one. I got two. I got one this past week, and I got one a couple weeks before. But the one before that, I don't remember what it was. But they did some great stuff with like clicking on the song and say "Add to play now."
Right.
Yep.
Which they didn't have.
Right.
That was something actually I had on my Zune. I was a Zune owner, you know. And feature was on there. And the iPod didn't, so I did miss it. But they did add that in. So, you know, a lot of great new features on it I love. But these updates are driving me berserk.
Yeah, I bet.
But I'll let it stay for now and do what I'm doing and see if maybe there's a fix somewhere down the road, hopefully.
Yeah, good luck. Sorry.
Thank you so much.
Yep.
Have a wonderful...
You too. Bye-bye.
One of the problems a lot of us feel is that iTunes has gotten to be such a huge monolithic program trying to do so many things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's managing your actual media. It's trying to do internet streaming. It's trying to sync to your devices.
Yep.
That if they'd split that out a little bit and have one program that manages the media and one program that does the syncing and a different program that does the streaming... there'd be a lot of programs, but each individual program might work better than trying to glom all. Because iTunes started out as just a jukebox program, and then they added the music store, and then the movie store, and then the internet streaming, and they've added this stuff over the last 15 years.
Right,
and it can be. I mean, I do like the feature of being able to just grab the songs that I want, not the whole album.
Yeah,
you know, pick and choose the ones you like, and boom, download them, put them on, and there you go.
I've been playing with Google Play Music, and I uploaded all my tens of thousands of albums to it, and it's really kind of interesting. One of the things they do is, and I'm sure the others all do it too, because why would they not?
Right.
It only if they already have that song, they just link you to it.
Hmm. Cool.
You know, because why keep more than one copy of a song?
It's
online?
Just
an
additional space that's unneeded.
Right. And every I think it's every day, but I don't look every day. Apple gives you one. Google gives you one free song, and some of them I've passed, but a number of them I've downloaded. There's a lot of great jazz up there. There's a lot of great blues and a lot of great everything up there. And they did a weird thing at one point. They gave me. Apparently, I had an album that I uploaded that was various artists.
Okay.
So all of a sudden, I had all those albums.
Huh.
So I called them, and they said, emailed them, and I said, you know, I didn't buy these albums. I really should not have access to them. And they said, yeah, that's a bug. It'll go away shortly. And it did.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, that
they're conscious of
everybody
what,
makes mistakes.
Yeah, they're conscious, and they knew there was an oops, and... Like you say, they're not trying to cheat any of the artists out of any royalties or anything else. And and that's a big thing a lot of folks don't get.
Well, and part of the problem is that the contracts are with the record labels.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a sort of big controversy about Taylor Swift pulled her songs off of Spotify because she didn't get enough money. Well, that's between her and her label. If her label... contract that she apparently would have to agree to said that she gets a penny a play, then so the artists themselves and this is changing too. Artists typically go through a label who go through the license, you know, ASCAP and BMI to actually collect the licensing royalties. And you know, in the olden days, you know, the artist would get 5% if they're lucky, and the label got the 95%, and that has sort of followed along in tradition.
Well, but it's starting to change. When you have somebody who is as big a powerhouse, you all right there?
Yeah, I still got all the tips.
Okay.
Boy, that thing closed quick.
Yeah. When you have somebody who's as big a powerhouse as Taylor Swift,
right?
She can dictate her terms because she doesn't need them. She can go with a different label and Hot New York Minute.
And a lot of these artists make their own labels, or they're doing it themselves.
Jim Gaffigan? Yeah. Who was it? Put a comedy album on his website for $5. Louis C.K.
Yeah.
Put a comedy album on his website for $5. Now, I'm not a huge Louis C.K. fan. I like him, but I'm not a huge fan. But I bought it just to support the guy, and he made $1 million. No label. No, it was all just off the web. Now,
yeah, we're seeing that with the YouTube, you know, what's become the YouTube stars these days. They never need a label.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sort of almost YouTube is the distribution medium, which almost becomes the label.
Yeah. But Jenna Marbles, the number one. She's from Rochester, you know.
Yeah. PewDiePie, my son watches some of his stuff.
Who?
PewDiePie.
PewDiePie.
PewDiePie, yeah. South Park did a good episode.
Kevin. Anyway, but the point is, they're PewDiePie. That was him, yeah. But there's a couple of others out there, and they're all making good money, and good for them, I say. All right, that stirring music tells us we're about to take a short break while the Bulls have been running for the last hour and 40 minutes. But we're going to take a short break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And, I love this story. We don't have anybody waiting, do we?
No. Nope.
Amazon is going to stop selling video streaming TV devices from Google and Apple because they don't, and I quote, interact well, unquote, with its own media service. Amazon has said it made the decision to avoid customer confusion, and the devices will be removed from sale by 29 October. Amazon, and I'd like to say I suspect on 30 October there will be lawsuits galore.
Yeah.
Amazon wants to sell products that work with its in-house streaming video service known as Prime Video. Prime Video is not available on Apple TV and Google's Chromecast, but it can be watched via an app on Apple and Android smartphones and tablets. Amazon has said, along with its own Fire TV, it will continue to sell other companies' devices that are compatible with Prime Video, These include Microsoft's Xbox and Sony's PlayStation. Google has just unveiled a new version of its Chromecast TV device, and Apple is due to release the latest version of its TV this month. Richard Windsor, an analyst at Edison Investment Research, said that by refusing to sell such products, Amazon could be diminishing the experience of its customers. These days, it's all about enticing users to join one's community and then providing great digital life services so that they stay. This is why Amazon's sledgehammer approach is very likely to backfire. This approach implies that Amazon is doing everything it can to prevent users from accessing what very well may be superior services from its competitors. Amazon has used similar tactics with book publishers. Last year, it blocked pre-orders from some books from the publisher Hachette while the two sides negotiated over prices. Many authors were angered by the move and accused Amazon of being anti-competitive. So, does this sound anti-competitive, or is Amazon just scared? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Maybe they're lazy. both the Apple TV and the Chromecast have apps in them. So why doesn't Amazon make an app for Apple TV and Chromecast?
Yeah, really.
They make it for iOS and Android, but they haven't made it for Apple TV and for
Chromecast.
We
haven't made an app for these devices, so they're not playing fair with us by making it available, so we're going to stop selling them. I don't think that's how it's supposed to work.
Yeah. The current Apple TV...
I'm taking my marbles and going home.
Yeah. In the current Apple TV, all the apps come from Apple, so they probably have to make agreements through Apple to get those apps on there. But there's network apps, or History Channel and CBS and HBO Now, and all those apps on Apple TV. The new version of Apple TV coming will take any app. So it's basically going to be an iPhone that plugs into your TV.
Right.
So that's the new feature they announced with the new Apple TV, is it's a straight TVOS, they're calling it, but it's very similar to iOS. So anybody will be able to write an app for the Apple TV. And maybe that's coming out October 30th, too. That's that 29th deadline.
Yeah, right.
So Apple has announced it, but they aren't shipping it yet. But Amazon's got to write the app for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would be fine.
Right. Amazon Prime does have an app for... It has cheese and crackers. Amazon Shopping, Amazon Music, Amazon for tablets, Amazon Prime Now, Amazon Fire TV, Amazon Kindle.
So they make apps for Android and for Chrome.
And Amazon Local.
It's not built into the Apple TV, and it's not built into the Chromecast.
But
it is on the Roku.
Yeah, it won't connect to my Nexus Player, which is the Google
TV
device.
Box. Yeah,
right.
But not not called Google TV. That didn't work out.
Right. So yes, what we're seeing is that Amazon Prime Now, assuming that's the one they're talking about, is not available for that device.
But you can put it on your iPad and then stream it to your Apple TV.
Right.
But it's not directly on the Apple TV.
Right, and the same, I can put it on my Galaxy Tab 4 or my Toshiba tablet and do it that way. And so I don't get it. Amazon Photos, Amazon Local, Amazon Cloud Drive, they're all here. None of them seem to work with the... and you know what? There's very little exclusive content on Amazon Video that I really need to see. So who are they hurting? Not me.
Yeah, really.
And sort of in the reverse, the Apple TV box is the only place to get iTunes content.
Right.
So, Apple doesn't sell the Amazon box in their stores, but it would be the same thing as Apple not selling the Fire TV or not selling the Chromecast in their own stores, but Apple doesn't sell many third-party products anyway.
Well, but still, the point is that I think there's an anti-competitive element to this, and I'm sure that there are lawyers who are currently drying off their chins as they wait for the 29th to roll around.
So why doesn't Amazon Prime work on the Apple TV? Oh, Amazon hasn't written the app for it yet?
Right.
Oh, okay.
Right. And so, how do you discriminate against something because you haven't?
Yeah, because of your laziness.
Right. Right, right.
I haven't gotten around to it.
Blame somebody else for your negligence.
Right, right.
It's basically what it boils down to. Oh, it's your fault just because I didn't take the time to do something.
Right, but here, for example, is HBO Go. And, well, I've already installed it on everything, so.
Well, and we've always said that about Amazon, is they have written their app for pretty much every platform. So they have, the Kindle came out, but they also have an iOS app. They have an Android app. So you can read your Kindle books on the other OSs.
Right.
And every time some new box came out, the Amazon app was pretty quick. So why, you know, why haven't they done it to Apple and Google? So what's probably happening is Apple and Google are saying, give us some money, and then we'll put your app on it.
That's very possible. That's very possible. Although Google generally doesn't. I mean, we know Apple does, but Google generally doesn't. I think they just, they're saying this is a rival and we don't want to sell it in our store.
Yeah.
But
if that's true, the case, that's anti-competitive and illegal, yeah.
Right, right, right. So I guess we'll find out, you know, it's not like we have a
crystal ball's a little foggy.
A crystal ball, right. It's the 29th rolling around. We'll see.
Mine's still out for repair.
Exactly. We'll see on probably then the 30th. Depends when's the... Yeah, that's the weather. The 30th is a Friday. So, yeah, we'll see if on the 30th there's a whole bunch of lawsuits that come out from Google and Apple.
And in sort of a related story, Apple revoked the developer rights to a company called iFixit, which are notorious for tearing apart devices and looking inside of them.
Yep.
iFixit got a pre-release copy of the new Apple TV. Right. It's supposed to be, you know, to sent to reviewers to have the review ready for when it comes out. They tore it apart and published all the specs online.
Right.
Breaking
Which is what they do, by the way.
Right.
Yeah.
But they broke their non-disclosure agreement. They told Apple we weren't going to do this, and they did it anyway.
Right. That's a different story.
Yeah.
If I bought and if I got my hands on an Apple TV ahead of time, tore it down and published all of that on my website, Apple couldn't touch me.
Because you didn't agree to not do it.
I never agreed not to. But iFixit...
Whoever you got it from.
That's a problem for them, but not for me. So
they put the screws to you. Who'd you get it from? Yeah.
Yeah.
I refuse to disclose my sources. But in terms of iFixit, they signed an agreement that said we won't do this. And then they did this. So they have been
sort of, you know... Well, the standard. Anytime new Apple hardware comes out, they fly someone to New Zealand because that's the first time zone that gets it.
Yeah.
To buy the first one in the world and tear it apart and have the specs and pictures printed online.
And again, perfectly legal.
Right.
Yep.
But you get a pre-release something under a non-disclosure agreement. You broke the agreement.
Right, right, right.
No,
and the NDAs have been gotten a little bit looser and looser. That it used to be that developers couldn't say anything about anything. They couldn't even talk to each other about code that came from Apple or products that came from Apple. But that's gotten a little looser, and it's now become you can't review it. You can talk about it, but you can't have a review, and you can't publish pictures because this is pre-release. It may change, and you don't want people confusing it.
Right, and so and I get that, and that's absolutely fair.
And so a lot of people can talk about pre-release stuff now that they couldn't before.
And you will see that.
Yeah.
This is not the review that will come out later.
Yeah, it's a preview.
But we want to say that we've played with this, and it's interesting, and we do see a problem, or we see something great, or whatever. So they can talk about it, but they can't show you that.
Well, they just came out, I heard on the radio, about an Apple Ring.
There's talk about the Apple Ring.
Ring, yeah.
Yep.
I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, there was on there that they applied for a patent or something.
Yeah, they've applied. And this is how you tell all the new things, because in order to...
Oh, a smart ring.
Yeah, they're talking about a smart ring. And what happens is...
They have trouble getting a battery to fit the watch. Please. They're going to put it in a ring now?
Get over yourself.
Yeah, really.
They want a smart ring, 3D touch... ring, or I wonder what they're going
to
call it.
So you tap the ring instead of tapping the watch, which talks to the phone.
Yeah, exactly. Now, who knows?
It's the one ring.
It's the one ring. Yeah. That's exactly the thing. One of the things calls that one Apple ring to rule them all. But Apple does have the idea for a smart ring, and that's, I think, gimmicky, because not sure what you're actually going to have. It's going to have a screen.
Green Lantern.
It's a Green Lantern ring. I'd like a Green Lantern ring in brightest day and darkest night. But anyway, Dave is giving me the stink eye now because it's time for us to leave. You can hear that music tells me you've now wasted your 2 solid hours of your life. You've almost decimated your day with the longest-running computer show in the known universe. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away, because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Hey, that's Soundbites, and it's right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.